Welcome to another episode of The Human Way. I'm your host, Matt Havens, and on today, it's a two-for-one. We're going to talk with Wendy Dantchesser. She's the CEO of One Southern Indiana, about economic development and how we persevere during some challenging times. But we're also going to talk simultaneously with Jessica Young, who's a team member at Simtech. She might also be the CEO there, but we're going to talk about how she uses titles to make sure that everybody understands nobody is above the team. It was a great conversation about the manufacturing industry and how we need flexibility in both our personal and professional lives so that we can change with the times. It was a great conversation. Looking forward to it. Let's get started. Jessica, Wendy, thank you so much for being guests on The Human Way. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Matt.
Yes, thanks for having us. Excited.
I'm excited too, because this is actually the first podcast we've done with two guests. So we're breaking barriers here. We're starting new trends. But for everybody who's listening, we got together because actually in about, I think it's almost 3 weeks now, we're going to be getting together for an event in Louisville. I'll be kind of leading off that day, but it's a day for manufacturing in the Southern Indiana area. So I'm going to start, have you both kind of share just a little bit about yourself, but I want to start with you, Jessica, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit about you, your role in your organization, but also within that manufacturing association that we'll be talking with in a couple of weeks.
Sure. So I'll start out by saying that I had a very windy career path, if you will, to land into manufacturing. So I started out wanting to be a sports broadcaster, sideline reporter, which is actually why my name is spelled kind of funky. I went and changed it when I turned 18 from the traditional Jessica to J-E-S-I-K-A, because I thought it would look fabulous up on the sidelines with my maiden name, Kuzwoka. Lots of K's. But then I fell into an accidental banker role after quickly learning that television and what I wanted to do was really crappy hours and then also not so great pay until I became the next Aaron Andrews. So banking was the next logical choice. And so I started my career up in Cincinnati, Ohio as a management trainee and truly went around holding every role in the banking industry. At that point, after spending about 10 years in banking and relocating back to the greater Louisville market, was heavily involved with a lot of manufacturers as clients of mine. And from a background perspective, I grew up in fabrication shops. So I was very familiar with how they operated. And to be honest, Matt, it was one of those things like, damn, if they can do it, why can't I do it?
Absolutely.
And my husband and partner always said we wanted something of our own. And so after vetting out a myriad of different industries, a myriad of different business models and options, we were lucky that the stars aligned and we were placed through mode of private placement with Simtech, which is a 45-year-old manufacturing company here in the heart of Southern Indiana. And then we've been somewhat on the express lane. So we finalized that acquisition in July of 2018. We purchased two additional manufacturing firms in July of 2019 and are rapidly growing. Named the top 10 precision manufacturer in the U.S. Of 2020 and of 2021. So excited momentum in manufacturing here, and am very honored to represent the Metro Manufacturing Alliance as the chair of the advisory council there.
So there's a lot that we can get into with just your career, that story, the progression, the growth that you've now seen, even in obviously a longer standing company, but for the last three years, the growth that you're seeing there, that's amazing. So I do want to get into that. Also just want to say hi to Wendy. Wendy's the CEO of the One Southern Indiana group, which is the one that I'll be kind of initially, how we got connected was through that. So Wendy, do you want to tell a similar sort of background of kind of how you got to where you are today?
Sure. Jessica's a hard rock star to follow, but I'll do my best. One Southern Indiana is the Chamber of Commerce and Local Economic Development Organization for Clark and Floyd counties. Really, we are part of the Louisville, Kentucky Metropolitan Statistical Area. So when we sell Southern Indiana for economic growth opportunities, we're really best known for a state we're not, or for a city we're not, and a state we're not a part of. Mm-hmm. So Matt's coming to the Yum Center, and that's in Louisville. We're excited there, but that's not even in Indiana, but yep, we can see it. So that's really the key for trying to understand how we can best service the businesses that are in our bi-state area, But then further, how do we expand that business base in a way that makes sense so that our residents have jobs that they can go to? We have cohesion around quality of place so that we can attract talent to the area. And then specifically, when we try to sector off different industry groups, such as manufacturing, when you pull 70 to 80 manufacturers together and you say, you know, what do you really need from the community as a whole? They'll give you the answers. And Jessica is serving as the advisory board chair for the group that we go to say, what's the specific need for our small to medium-sized manufacturers in Southern Indiana? Indiana is has such a high percentage of our GDP that is that stems from manufacturing. It's the highest state in manufacturing GDP in the country. Somebody gave us an example the other day. We have a higher GDP percentage dependent on manufacturing in Indiana than Hawaii does based on tourism.
Wow.
So if you put that into perspective, it really shows that manufacturing is key to what Indiana is made of.
Well, it's that's not a key to what's important for Indiana and their growth and the community there. But the one of the reasons that I was excited to have you both on is because, you know, as we got talking initially about the event and about what we're going to talk about and what we're going to do, you know, my mind shifted to just the manufacturing industry, everything that we've all had to go through over the course of the last year, but how, you know, manufacturing really is the backbone of so much of this country. You know, there's a lot of industries I think we could put into that space that like help it run, but manufacturing is certainly one of those. And not many people have like insight into what that looks like and what it means when we talk about, you know, making our businesses human and how we lead in these dynamic places. You know, I knew both of you would be, you know, great guests to kind of like lend some insight on that. So I want to jump back to Jessica really quick, because one of the things that I'm super impressed about and want the audience to hear a little bit more about is, while you are the CEO of SimTech, you're very clear to not go by that title. Instead, it would be the team member at SimTech. And so just tell me a little bit about that. Like why most people, when they're buttoned up, ready to be the CEO of a company, like they're proud of that. And it's going to be everywhere. You know, you're going to walk around with your head held high as the CEO, not that you aren't, but you're intentional about that word. And so could you share a little bit about what you're doing there and why?
Yeah, absolutely. So as mentioned, a big sports fan, obviously. And so it goes back to Bo Schembechler, the legendary Michigan football coach, who said there is no one person, no one player, no one coach that is above or below the team. And if we think that way, what impact will it have on the team? Then the team will be all the better for it. And so that mentality resonates throughout our facility. In fact, that quote's hung up. And that before anyone is identified, self-included, that we are a team member first. Our three core values break it down simply, you know, safety, we're in manufacturing, quality of work, and then being a good team member. And we define that as being dependable, reliable, accountable, and showing initiative. And so everything we do goes back to, are we hitting those three core values? So you'll see in our signature lines of any emails, on our business cards, that team members first, even down to the requisitions that we have open out in the community.
Wow, that's awesome. And like, I mean, do you ever get pushback from other people, either at SimTech or within your industry or within the organization, being like, well, why are you doing that? Like, that's not how we do it here. Or that's, you know, titles are important. You know, I completely disagree with that sort of mentality, but like, do you ever get any sort of pushback on that?
No, not at all. I think at first they probably thought that we were a little crazy, you know, not to have that title, you know, blasting out. But the more that our team heard that, you know, that, oh no, we're team member first, or we identified as team member first. And moreover that there's no position and no job duty that's above or below the team. You know, myself, my husband, our CFO, we clean the toilets, we clean the breaker. I mean, there is not one job that we're not willing to do. And that trickles into everything that we do from a safety standpoint. Every single one of us are forklift certified and lockout tagout certified. Yep. Why? Because we all should be able to jump in and help each other out whenever we can.
You know, that reminds me of a time that I was So my background before speaking was in insurance and financial services. And I helped run contact centers for a Fortune 50 company there. And in one of the situations that when I came into a leadership role, we had the opportunity to also get licensed for insurance and financial services. Now in the management role, you had no reason to necessarily need to do that. But you know, it was my belief and a few others who felt like, well, you know, if I'm going to lead this group of people who's going to be doing this every day, day in and day out, it would probably benefit to really understand their role and what they have to do and how they have to go through it. Now, it doesn't mean I'm going to do that every day, but to have that baseline understanding. And I do remember some people being like, oh no, well, no, you're in management. You don't need to do that. And so I love hearing like how you've taken this mentality of it, we're all a team. And sometimes that means we got to get in and do the dirty work and be comfortable with that.
Yep, absolutely. And I'll share a story. There's a quote that says, we're not a team because we work together, but we're a team because we respect and trust one another. Mm-hmm. And we've unfortunately seen some deaths of family members within our team, and just watching our team come together and show up for each other. It really resonates that you're in this because it's something bigger than yourself. You know, the team is bigger than yourself.
That I think that is so important that organizations, leaders, like understand that it's the little things you do every day that build that culture and build a culture where, you know, it becomes more than just a place to work. It becomes a place to like be and where you want to go and who you want to be around. And obviously you're taking some amazing steps to do that. Wendy, kind of maybe jumping over to you for just a little bit. You know, another thing that we've talked about and certainly experienced here in the last year, every industry, you know, gone through some pretty drastic changes. And in some cases, industries have thrived over the course of the last year. In some cases, they've been, you know, really, really hurt. From your vantage point, being more in sort of the economic development space and seeing the different industries as well, like what have been some of the like challenges or things that you think that we've learned from this last year that we can kind of take forward and learn from?
Well, the recession induced by this pandemic has certainly chosen its winners and losers. And in terms of how businesses have looked at our area for growth opportunities, we've still seen a lot of activity. We had a good year in 2020. We made 9 project announcements. And in that means either existing companies that are doing a major expansion or new companies coming to the marketplace for the first time. In comparison, we had 14 in 2019. So again, we were 5 off of what we had the year prior, but 2020 was certainly no normal aspect of the year whatsoever.
Yeah.
the industry sectors that saw growth really depended on what they were doing. For instance, we have one company that was going gangbusters. Their core project or product is air filters. So you can imagine during a pandemic, there's a lot of a need for air filters, and they serve all types of different uses, industry uses for that. And so we saw initially all of this fear for companies, manufacturers specifically, but across the board, when everybody said, are you an essential worker? Well, wow, we all feel like we're essential, right? We all want to be essential. But then all of a sudden, somebody from up high was telling us who's essential and who's not. And so we had to sort our way through that. And as the chamber side of the house, helping businesses understand how these different orders that came down from governors or even in some cases county health officials, how they impacted them was a big part of what we did. But on the backside of that, we recognize and just because businesses were deemed essential doesn't mean that their business stayed open and was strong and remained strong. They still had some very significant challenges to maintain. Did they stay open successfully from a business bottom line category? Were they able to ensure that their employees, vendors, customers were safe in their environment? That was a big piece of what we did. And then thirdly, how did what their role in community was, how did that filter or play into a larger community strategy for continued recovery? And so during different times, March looked a lot different than May did. May looked tremendously different than September. And here we are a full year past the initial shutdown, and some companies are still figuring out where exactly they fit. The key to resiliency, though, was did they put their heads in the sand, hoping that this would all pass over and they would emerge on the backside of it with nothing changed. Quite frankly, those are the folks that are hurting the worst right now. Yep. Those that leaned in, said, this is a storm coming, but we're going to be out on the front of this and making the changes that we need to make along the way. Those are the ones that have rebounded better. Not in all cases have they rebounded well, but they've at least rebounded better. And there's a sense of control when you're working with the change as opposed to having the change work against you. Mm-hmm. And I think those companies have a better attitude about what they can control and what they can tackle in the future if they've survived it to this point.
Yeah. And that's the tough part, right? Is like, because with so much of what happened with whether it's shutdown or businesses and we didn't have any control over it, or you didn't do anything wrong. Like nothing, everything was peachy. Everything was going well, but no business decision did you make that somehow, you know, that was going to tank your business. And so I love your point about just either working with and moving with the change. And those typically those organizations or those people or those leaders are the ones who have manage this a little bit better than like you said, sticking their head in the sand. Jessica, what sort of challenges have you all had in your industry or at SimTech with the last year? And what have you had to change and move with?
Well, certainly it's no secret that manufacturers as a whole were going to be the last part to be hit by this. And I think you're seeing that now with the supply chain issues that you have, the workforce issues. Those issues presented themselves before this, but what the pandemic did was just basically drive a giant big hole. So now that you they're very identifiable. But luckily with SimTech in May of 2019, we decided to roll out, which is very uncommon from a manufacturing standpoint, a flex schedule. And again, when the team is at the heart of everything, you know, we say there's shit happens. There's, you know, there might be a day where you're running late or you'd like to take your spouse out to lunch or you've got a dentist appointment and you're with your work family more than you're with your own family. So why not be flexible to that work-life blend? So we rolled that out and I swear, I think everyone thought we were crazy for doing it, but we flushed the idea amongst, and keep in mind our average tenure at SimTech was 20 years. So there was a lot of, well, we've always done it this way and this is what could go wrong. And so we flushed that out and rolled it out. And, thank goodness we did, because in light of how the pandemic's hit, how civil unrest has hit, how supply chain issues have hit, we've been able to really maximize on that flex time. And again, we're running it across, you know, three companies that we've married into each other because of this. So I think to answer your question, definitely a good foundation, a good core base with that team first mentality has helped us guide through this. And then the challenges that continue to present are of course, workforce. We've got to get more of the next generation in line for manufacturing. It was a problem before. It's definitely a gaping problem now. But how do we do that and bring the next generation in? Because we do have a lot of retirements that are about to happen and are coupled with an already pretty big issue. And then the supply chain, you know, how do you source domestically? How can you control those costs? And right now it's kind of this moving target, you know, just basic steels shooting up 87% overnight. Yeah. So managing all of those processes. But again, I think it for manufacturers, it's putting a plan in place and a process in place. And then, as Wendy said, being adaptable to that and making the changes with it.
So I agree with all that, but I want to go back to actually kind of where you started with that I really think is important for people to understand is I don't know your business specifically, Jessica, you know, to say confidently that, you know, this, that, or would work, but I have utmost belief that because you've focused so much on that team component, that when you want to introduce something like flex schedules, it's gonna work because everybody wants it to work for the team. And too often, like organizations or sometimes leaders in their team, they don't spend enough time starting there so that when bad stuff does happen or you gotta make a bigger change than everybody's gonna be ready for, they're willing to work with you. It's the effort that you put in beforehand that makes that possible. In the insurance industry, we did something similar where this was a call center job. So call center jobs are very, very standardized. They're rigid. I mean, it's down to the minute of, you know, you need to be off the phone to start your 15 minute break and you need to be back at exactly 15 minutes to go. And we needed to kind of make some adjustments to our schedule. So we actually stole the idea from Audible because I was at a conference and heard some of their leadership team talk, but we allowed the call center reps to pick their schedule. And just like you said, with the flex schedules, I had some people looking at us a little crazy saying that this will never work. They're going to only pick the schedules that don't work for us. But we really focused on the front end of, we felt like we had the team that could do it, that kind of like wanted to be there and see everything be successful. And we just laid out like, hey, look, here's when customers are calling us. Like, so you know exactly too, when the phone's going to ring, like we kind of have a general idea of what we need, but you pick the schedule that works for you. So that, like you said, Jessica, you know, when stuff gets in the way, something comes up, they could prepare for it. And it was amazing. When we actually allowed them to pick their schedules, they picked schedules that worked for them, but worked for the team and worked for the group. And we were able to kind of roll it out with really out any hitch. So it's really important that I think people focus on that team component first so that you can adapt to those changes.
Matt, I love that. And the example that Jessica is setting, and then that example that you've just given, it's really taking, it's a simple concept. How do you connect the people who sign the front of the mm-hmm. paycheck with the back of the paycheck? Mm-hmm. You want the people who are signing both sides of that paycheck to recognize that paycheck only exists if they do that in concert and to the benefit of everybody. So I think that those examples are abundant when you go out and look for them. But I don't believe that they're inherent for folks to work that way. We've got a mentality of top down, top makes the decisions, the people on the bottom do what the people on the top tell them to do. And in more and more, and whether it's because I'm getting older or because I'm you know, the society is just recognizing that differently, it's more important now that we put all of our oars in the water at the same time and recognize that not one of us is any more important than the other. We all have responsibilities that make the ship move forward.
Well, so well said. And I think that then leads us into the sort of like the talent development, the talent pipeline conversation, because, you know, that's why you're seeing people today focusing on some of these other sort of, I'll call them fringe benefits of an organization than specifically their work. Cause you're right, Jessica, they're going to spend more time with the people they work with than they are their spouse. So I want to enjoy the people I work with. I want to, you know, not dread every 8-hour shift that I have to, you know, go in and work. And so what are some of the things that you're seeing either in manufacturing or just, you know, in your community? What are some of the things that you think are going to help drive some of that talent pipeline? Like, what do we need to do differently?
Well, I'll start with the big picture and let Jessica add some of the things that she sees from Semtec. But I think that the recognition that because future workers, whether they're in school, continuing their education, they're in a starter job, or they're going to move into something different, they like to see a sense of control over what it is that their future looks like. I think we, as you know, again, 50 plus generation, look back and think, wow, you know, we're going to make this easy for them. We're going to tell them exactly what they have to do. They don't necessarily want people to tell them what they have to do and when they have to do it. And they don't necessarily respond well. We also have to trust that they're going to, like in your example, Matt, see that there's an opportunity for them to make the right decision for the company in when the company needs the right decision to be made. So culture is a big piece of what we're talking about. I think it's across the board, there are workforce shortages. And we're hearing that even as we're still emerging from the pandemic, there are more signs along the industrial corridors now with now hiring than I've seen probably in my 20 plus years in economic development in the business. And that tells me that we're not necessarily focused on a pipeline approach of identifying those workers, showing them that yes, Jessica may have to clean toilets at her place at Semtec, but there's some glamorous sides of the work as well. And it's something that they can strive for and they can find fulfillment there so that they're going to feel important. And then on the company side, benefits packages are important, but what's a good benefit for me at my age may be a lot different from those that are in their 20s. They may be interested to see the benefit program as a company softball team that they can get together with their friends, or it may be the ability to take their cell phones into different work environments that normally we think are off limits to cell phones.
Yep.
Matt, when you and I first, when I first heard you speak, it was about generational differences in companies. And we have to recognize that while we move through the different desires of what our generation, our specific situation dictates, it's not different. It's not the same for the 20 something that just got out of college and is looking to start his or her career. So those are some of the things I think that the more we talk about those needs within a company and how specific that they are to the individual, the better off we're going to be for putting ourselves in the right place for the future.
Absolutely. I think it's the, we want flexibility within ourselves, with employees, with our people, right? I think as businesses and organizations, we have to take that same flexibility and mindset into how we operate as a business too. We have to be willing to make those changes. Jessica, what sort of things are you seeing, you know, specifically in your industry or at SimTech?
Well, I certainly will echo a lot of Wendy's compliments. And if anything, the corporate world, it taught me a lot of bad things and what not to do. But the one positive that I really enjoyed, and I am on the cusp of a millennial, was having a performance development plan, and whether that is personally or professionally. And so we introduced that into our small business, and even our teammates that have been with us for 35 years, you know, and again, it felt like, okay, this was the only step, or in our case, it was being on the other side of the glass, right? The office versus the shop.
Yep.
And breaking down that misconception that you can create a position based off of your skills. Just because it doesn't exist now doesn't mean that it can't. As a growing company, that allows us to be scalable. So each of our teammates have the opportunity to go on to that professional or personal development plan. And it helps hold accountability both ways.
Yep.
So that's one thing we're doing. And to feed into the culture, 100%, making it a fun place to be. Because as you said, Matt, you know, you don't want to come to a place that you're dreading and you're counting the minutes. So we try to have a monthly pitch-in lunch. We have an annual block party, a chili cook-off, and it's just fun. And it's a fun way to engage the entire team. I'll tell you, the things they look forward to the most are our pitch-in days. We've got some great people that can smoke the meats and, you know, bring us fixins. So we joke that we have, it wasn't the COVID 15, we have the SimTech 15. Just be prepared to gain weight when you come on board here.
Hey, that sounds good to me. Yeah. My corporate career as well. Like that was absolutely, you know, we'd sometimes, you'd almost like joke about it a little bit, like, man, how many food days can we do and how many, you know, potlucks and things, but then you got into it and you just realize that those are the moments where we create relationships. Those are the moments where we start to forge these bonds, and it's what brings us together. So again, later on down the road, when we have to tackle some harder challenges or we have to really push together as a team, you're more likely to do that. You're more likely to work. So if I could, I kind of want to just switch gears here just very briefly. And I'm going to pull out something that, that I saw, Jessica, from a conversation you had, as I was doing my research to, you know, understand a little bit about your company and you were talking, there was an interview I think you did where you were talking about failure, and you were talking about how, I believe it was about like women in the workforce and women leaders, but how like you're gonna fail and to be able to like show that and see it more and be comfortable with that. If I could, I just kind of wanted you to expand on that idea of failure a little bit for the audience, because I think it's really important to see people who have reached levels like yourself, who are owning organizations in multiple industries, and to know that, like, yeah, not every day is perfect. We're going to have these failures, but it's what we do with those. So is there one failure that you, or one or two failures that you can really think of that stuck out to you as maybe some of the greatest learning moments that you had in your career?
Sure. So two things. One, failure is inevitable. So if you think that you're not going to fail there, that's a misconception. And two, there is no such thing as failure because you learn from it. So it's mm-hmm. what you do with it afterwards. So to think on shit, I've had a ton of failures. I like every day, I feel like we're hitting our head on something else, you know, and it's like, okay, let's reflect back. How could I have done that differently? Oh gosh, you stumped me. A big failure.
you know, I don't want to make it necessarily be a big failure, because I think you're right. It's the little failures. It's the way I kind of like to think of it is it's almost like a willingness to fail, like being able to put yourself out there enough where, yeah, hey, it may not be perfect, but I learned from that and it made me grow. So I sometimes say it in terms of what's your biggest failure, but the reality means is like, it could be something super, super small.
Yeah. And reflecting back, I mean, no matter which career path or lane that we've been in, you know, you could argue both ways. Like, what did you learn from the acquisition at Simtek? And I'll tell you, there was a lot that we learned from that. What did we learn from the acquisition of Axis and Action? You know, there's probably a happy medium on how to acquire companies, and, you know, the 30-day express lane wasn't it, but also the 9-month timeframe wasn't it either. So
I think that's an area that a lot of people don't get experience with, is like when there's an acquisition or a merger and you're kind of like bringing in different, either different cultures, work cultures that you're kind of bringing in. Like, what were some of the challenges that you had, if any, like when you made those that you learned from?
Sure. So I would say that the acquisition with Simtek, we had 100% retention. Wow. And what we did was we got in, we understood roles, we didn't come in to change anything. We started implementing the team mentality. And similar to you, Matt, there's not anything that I didn't want to learn. So I sat with every teammate and I've ran a lathe. I ran the sandblaster. It's actually one of my favorite jobs. learned how to drive the trucks, got certified on the forklift. And that acquisition, from a retention and team member standpoint and earning their trust and rolling out the performance reviews and the performance plans was excellent. So we thought, okay, that's replicable, that's duplicating, you know, how can we do that with the other two acquisitions? And so went in with an exact similar approach, and we lost 50% of the team for no reason. There wasn't a goodbye, I hate you, I don't want to work for you. There was nothing. They just turned their keys in and walked out. And our commitment was always, we will offer you the same or better, whatever it was, you know, this is the mentality. And so I think that lesson was, you know, while it felt that it could be a replicable piece, that it really maybe wasn't. Maybe we could have went with a different approach to understand and catered to their feelings and how to retain those teammates over there.
I think it comes back to that sort of like flexibility, right, that we were just talking about. You do have to be flexible in these moments as organizations, as leaders, because what's worked for us in the past, it may not work for us in this exact next same situation. Now, we're going to draw from that experience, and it's going to certainly help us probably better than if we had never experienced those. But I think it's sort of that flexibility. So I appreciate you sharing that. I didn't mean to put you on the spot about the failure piece, because, you know, I'll share with you all one of my, I call it one of my favorite failures, and it's the smallest thing in the world. But back when I had my corporate career, I'd work my hours, whatever. I would come home at night, and we had two very young, I have twin daughters who are 7 now. And they were very young. They were maybe less than 1 at this time or something like that. And I would come home at 5:30, 6 o'clock. And the first thing I would do is I would take my computer out of my bag and I would put it on the kitchen table and I would set it up. Sometimes I would hop right into emails and I would, you know, because literally I just left the office 20 minutes ago on the drive home, but apparently something must've happened that quickly that I needed to hop on emails. And it was my wife who just one day, not even angry at me, not even trying to say anything profound, but she just walked up and she said, "Hey, you know how often you do that? Like, just put it away. They're going to go to sleep in an hour and you can get back on it then." And I, you know, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, wait, why? Whoa. If I'm saying that like the most important thing to me is my family, why am I coming home and with the 1 hour I have with my kids before they go to sleep, why am I doing email? And like that moment changed for me. That to me, I felt like, well, I'm failing at what I need to be doing as a father and as a husband and as a person. So like that moment for me was very instrumental to saying, if I'm going to say I'm going to be one person, I need to be that person everywhere I go. And so it changed my leadership at work. It made it more important for me to make sure that if family was important to somebody or their kids' sports games or promotion and advancement was their thing, right? That like, I really tried to tailor what I needed to for them based off what I perceived as my own failure. Wendy, is there anything that comes to mind for you from a standpoint of like failure or how you try to learn from different experiences that may not have gone the way you wanted?
Well, since we're all parents on the call here, I think we've all had parent fails, and since we all have daughters, I think they like to point those out to us. So as yours get older, Matt, you'll learn more about that.
I'm very scared.
Actually, I think it's fabulous, but there is no playbook, and there are many times that that we look at the work that we do, and in my role, I sort of feel like I'm nurturing a community, trying to move a community forward, helping. As I would my teenager, just understand where we are today and how do we better ourselves so that we'll take advantage of the better thing for tomorrow. And the recognition that, you know, our goals are not the same, whether it's me and my 13-year-old or whether it's the bigger city and the more rural community that have an opportunity to work together. We had a huge fail in 2015 when the state of Indiana offered communities the opportunities the opportunity to work together as a region and to apply for some dollars that would really affect the ability to build quality of place projects, those places that bring people to a community and get those that live there to want to stay in the community. And we weren't able to pull it together because we didn't have shared values on what really was important to us. Some people like individual control. Some people like the ability to have more opportunities and things to be proud of. Some people don't want anything to change. And until you go out and you start asking what their motivations are, it's really hard to get people to act like they're part of the same team. So we failed miserably in 2015. We're working through that. We're trying to get folks to see that what we leave here behind, especially with all of this recovery money coming down at the local level and at the state level, there's an opportunity. I'm going to change it. There is an expectation that we do something with this funding opportunity to leave it better than we found it. And not one of us has the right answers if we're not consulting the rest. And I think that we're really pushing forth with that message now that, let's face it, our kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids are going to be paying for this windfall of investment opportunity that we have now. Let's do right by them. Let's make sure that they're proud of the investments that we make so that our community is better. We're attracting more jobs that are the good paying types of jobs that we're training our kids for. And let's give them a reason to care about their hometown. Trying to get a 13-year-old to give a darn about her hometown is really, really tough. But at 52, it's a lot easier. It's one of the most important things I can do. So That's a lesson that I'm optimistic about, because we failed, we learned a lot of lessons, and here we are back taking another bite at the apple.
It's funny how just like our perspective changes, right? Mm-hmm. Our perspective changes and changes the mindset, and that, you know, when that happens, who knows? And you know, the same can be said for organizations, leaders, and their teams. Like, you know, it could be something very small that changes that and pushes it in a different direction. We just have to be willing to have the conversation and talk and be there to support them through that. So I want to kind of maybe wrap up here a little bit. We've actually been going for pretty long. So thank you for your time and for the conversation. I just want to maybe kind of throw out some thoughts or ideas about, you know, what's next, like, where do we go from here? And Jessica, maybe from a manufacturing standpoint, from a Simtek standpoint, like what does the next year look like? What does the next 5 years look like? And what can we do as individuals to grow and grow with the changes that are likely to come?
Well, certainly a year from now looks very different than what in 2019 we would have thought it would have looked like. And so I think we go back to that flexibility, not just in a schedule, but being flexible to the changing and evaluation of the direction you're going. And I wanted to point out everything that we do from a SimTech standpoint, but also across any industry. I think there are three C's that you really need to live by, and that is communication. And I've heard and read that most people need to hear or be communicated to at least 7 times for them to stick. So that's communicating your vision, your mission, your why, your purpose. And so making sure that that's crystal clear in communication. The second C would be collaboration. And so anything that you do, it's communicated, but then bringing in opposite thought patterns and opposite ways of thinking to flush ideas out. So collaboration doesn't work just saying, hey, I've got this great idea, now everybody say yes to me because it's my idea. But it really is flushing those ideas out from a collaborative standpoint. And then without communication and collaboration, it has to be consistent. So that consistent message. So when we look at our annual plans, you know, we're bringing in part of the team. Our ultimate goal, and we joke, and Wendy will realize or have heard this several times, is that we say we're building a manufacturing empire. That is our plan. And so that's a very lofty goal. And then we break it down in chunks we can chew. And what does that look like? Well, at year 3, which we're rounding, we're about to break ground on our expansion and our headquarters. That's what year 3 looks like for us. And then what does year 4 and year 5? And so just that constant revisiting, that constant communication, that constant collaboration, and doing those things consistently. And I think we're doing that at SimTech, but I think if companies mirrored that mentality, that they would continue to move the needle and be adaptive to the changes.
I love it. So said slightly differently, you have what I call a patience plan. Like, we got to have our right now plans for what we're going to do in the moment, in the day. But if we don't have that patience plan, that thing that we're working towards, that people can grasp onto and be like, oh, okay, I want to be a part of that, then we're missing it. And too often we just focus on the right now. So I love to hear that you're building an empire. That's absolutely beautiful. Wendy, what about for One Southern Indiana? What's the right now and the patience plan look like there?
Well, I'll add a C word, and that's change. Because as people are learning from the last 14 months, we're not going to adapt to all of the things that we've learned in the next, in a 30-day period. It's going to be built in and built on. And we all learn things about ourselves. The creativity that we lost when we all worked, in our environment at least, when we all worked from home, when we came back, we got excited again, and we fed off of each other, and you could feel it in the office. And, you know, even behind the masks or standing 6 feet apart, it didn't matter. We were together. We were on track for the same goals. The changing needs in our work is very reactive to what our business members need, whether it's on the chamber side or the companies that are coming in to look at the area from economic development. They don't necessarily now want to travel for that first site visit to see the building. So how do we take our cell phones and show them what it is that they're considering, and try and figure out how to entice them that this is going to be the place that's going to meet their needs? We're thinking differently about how all of that works, and how we also learned that what businesses need from us, maybe we may need more depth in a business education way, because to be eligible for the PPP or the EIDL loans or any of the assistance programs, you had to have your finances in order. And so how do we make sure that we're doing a service to the smaller businesses who've been getting by putting their receipts in a shoebox? It's not going to cut it moving forward if, and I'm not saying we're going to have another pandemic or another recession.
Let's hold off on that.
But we have to assume that something's going to disrupt our plan. So we have to adapt and change to that as well.
I agree wholeheartedly. It doesn't matter if it's COVID-22 or, you know, whatever it is, right? There's always going to be this change. It's going to look differently, and we have to be willing to adapt. Thank you both, Jessica, Wendy, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it as CEOs and team members. you know, to take the time out of your day to talk with me means a lot. Thank you. For everyone who's listening, there's a ton I think that you can take from this, but I'm just going to shout out a couple of the things that really stuck out to me was obviously the flexibility that we need. I think we need that flexibility in every single thing that we do in life, whether it's work, whether it's parenting. We have to be willing to communicate, to collaborate, and to be consistent in those things. Jessica, I love the three C's. But also, I think one of the things that this is such a good reminder for me is that everything starts and ends with the culture, with the team, with who you're working with that group of people that makes up your community. And so often in business, in organizations, we don't focus enough on the community that we have there at work. And when you focus on that, when you take intentional steps like Jessica and Simtech are doing there with their organization, then those people will continue to work hard or harder and with you through the change. But you got to start putting in those seeds now. And so if you're struggling as a leader to kind of get the culture that you want right, start with the little things. It's little things about how you present yourself, how you talk about each other, and how you treat each other a little bit more human. So thank you, Jessica, again. Wendy, thank you so much for your time. I'm looking forward to seeing you all in person May 12th in Louisville. So we're going to have a lot of fun for those that are going to be at the event. We're going to have a great time, great kickoff to that morning. So thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, we'll talk soon.